Folks, your financial freedom is at stake when the government thrives on creating unrelenting inflation, an astronomical debt, crippling interest rates, and market turmoil that we haven't seen in decades. And now you have an administration that wants to tax everything that you have to fund runaway entitlement spending. You should empower yourself with opportunity and the freedom to pursue success and to keep the fruits of your hard work. And if you want to protect your future, you should call a precious metals dealer that I trust, American Hartford Gold. They can show you how to protect your savings and retirement accounts by diversifying your portfolio with physical gold and silver. And all it takes to get started is a short phone call. And American Hartford Gold can have physical gold and silver delivered right to your door or inside your IRA or 401k. They make it easy. American Hartford Gold is the highest rated firm in the country with an A+ rating from the Better Business Bureau and thousands of satisfied clients. Call today and they'll give you up to $5,000 of free silver on your first qualifying order. Call American Hartford Gold today at 866-887-1188. That's 866-887-1188 or text Dana to 998899. That's 866-887-1188 or text Dana to 998899.
I know you guys got a lot of problems out here, but your governor's very concerned about what we're doing in Florida, so I figured I had to come by.
That was a very interesting reception, because there were a lot of people that went out there to see DeSantis at the Reagan Library address that he gave. Welcome back to the program. Top of our second hour. Dana Loesch here with you. Good to be with you. Nationally syndicated radio program. You can hear it coast to coast. And you also have the benefit of being able to watch the simulcast of the radio show on YouTube, Facebook, channel 349, DirecTV. Newsom was probably mad that he was out there. I would imagine. I'm going to tell you, I learned so much tea over this weekend. I was just filling Kane in on some of it. Kane, your jaw was on the table, wasn't it?
Yeah, it sure was.
Yeah. So let me just tell you a little bit of what I heard over the weekend. Because it was the Dallas County Reagan dinner, which was, I think, different from their Lincoln Days thing, obviously. And a lot of grassroots folks there, because a lot of people, you'd be shocked at the number of people who got involved in politics and started taking over precincts because literally over fights over school. I mean, almost for no other reason but that. So it's a very, I kind of, you know, chuckle when I see, you know, some people saying that, and I say this as someone who votes Republican, but I don't consider myself one. I will vote for the most conservative person on the ballot, which ends up being Republican most of the time. But I am so allergic to political tribalism, it almost makes it difficult for me to carry on like a normal person in any kind of political gathering. It's just so weird. And I don't know, like I don't like to fangirl over politicians, because I am that American part of my DNA just screams that sounds like a monarchy every time it, you know, I don't know. I just, it's weird. So it was an interesting, and everyone was very nice, but so many people that I talked to got involved in politics because they were livid over their kids' schooling and the fight over school boards. It's amazing. And was at that event, and because I was hearing from some folks in California, they're like, oh, Gavin Newsom was so mad that DeSantis went out there, and kind of just, I think it may, you know, he's talking about his book and the blueprint that they did for Florida, and obviously made Newsom mad. And I also think, too, DeSantis was in Texas at the Reagan Days, the Dallas County Reagan Days thing. And, you know, every year they have different, you know, politicians that come out and speak. So they've had different governors come out before, different elected officials come out before. It's not unusual. I just don't normally go to stuff like this, because I went as a guest of some friends there, Clint and Glenn Story, who does Patriot Mobile. But they were there, too. and talked to him for a while. Chip Roy, Congressman Chip Roy, was there. I was at a table with Ronnie Davis and Chip Roy and Beth Van Dyne, the Texas delegation. Yeah, yeah. That was a fun table. That was the fun table. But it was interesting because one of the things that I had been asking, whether it's the Moms of Liberty, and those are the moms that have been very, very active in across the country in the school board fight and the CRT fight. And I know so many of them, and they are absolutely tireless in their advocacy for genuine academic education. And one of the things that I had been asking some of them about, and some of these other grassroots educational activists, was where has leadership in Texas been on the Republican side? And not just in Texas, but whenever I'm in, you know, when I was in Florida, I was talking to some people in Florida. Florida was different because it was like everybody from the governor on down, what could they do to help with a school board race? And this isn't about executive control. No one was telling any, they weren't directing anybody who to endorse, who not to endorse. They were like, this is who you want. How can we help? Because all politics is local. And I have a feeling that some of the higher up Texas leadership in the Republican Party don't understand that. All politics is local. And that's kind of what I was hearing from a lot of these activists in education. And so one of the women that I had met, she was an amazing activist, and she had been very, very active in Dallas. She was fighting on behalf of her kids' school. She was, you know, running for office. She didn't get a lot of help from Texas GOP. And a lot of Republican parties, and Missouri Republican Party used to do this. They did not see the importance or need in trying to make areas that have not been competitive for Republicans. You see Democrats running people like Beto O'Rourke and Wendy Davis in Texas. The only reason they did that is not because, and they use these throwaway candidates. These are not candidates that ever had a shot in hell of doing anything grand. They're throwaway candidates that Democrats can use because the goal is to register voters and to seed the ground. That is it. They look at this and fight this incrementally. And a lot of Republicans don't see the need to emulating a similar tactic. And they should. Like, Democrats didn't even think Beto O'Rourke had a shot in hell of winning anything. But that wasn't the point. He was just dumb enough to be the fall guy for it. He was the one who was dumb and goofy enough to get high off his own farts and believe the hype that they organized to be published about him. And instead of realizing that he was just an apparatus to register voters and seed the ground, he actually bought into his own hype. And then he became a problem for them because he wouldn't stop running. But Republicans don't do this. So I was talking to a mom who ran for school board in Dallas. Dallas County is really tough. It's kind of like 70-30 and in terms of Republican Democrat, and it's flipping consistently. And one of the organizers that I was speaking with was saying, yeah, it's a lot of Hispanic parents that are also standing up to the CRT that is in taking over their kids' education. And that's one of the things that Democrats don't realize either. They're losing Hispanic voters. They are hemorrhaging Hispanic voters. They're hemorrhaging Black voters. I don't know if they fully realize this, but when you break down, especially whether it's in Dallas or some of these other areas, you saw this in Virginia as well. You definitely saw it in Florida. This is an issue that Democrats cannot compete on because they have just completely compromised kids for identity politics. They've compromised education for identity politics, and now they're paying the price for it electorally. And so was having conversations with these people, and I'm like, okay, well, where's, you know, I see, like, in some of these states, in some other states, I've seen leadership really take it to heart that all politics was local. Why isn't our governor endorsing school board races? I'm not saying controlling them. There's a difference. I'm not saying for a governor to come in and say, okay, I want this person to run and controlling it. But why not throw some of your shine on these people? Do an endorsement. Do a robocall. You know, maybe show up at a fundraiser. You wouldn't believe in some of these counties how, in some of these areas, how expensive these school board races are getting. You wouldn't believe how well funded and organized the left is on this. In my area, we had out of state people organizing and donating hand over fist cash money. They were able to use their contacts to get NBC in and have Lester Holt and have NBC cameras driving down neighborhood streets. It was wild. I mean, if ever there was a time when you would, you know, would really hope that you have these elected officials come and maybe do some real good as, you know, in recognizing the importance of some of these races and putting an endorsement in. A lot of people were not paying attention to things like school board races until lockdown happened, and then they saw what their kids were learning, and they realized that these might be some of the most important elected seats in the country. So why is it that you don't have governors in every state doing this? I mean, I would like to see Governor Greg Abbott say, you know what, here's an embattled school board seat. I'm gonna endorse. I mean, obviously, it's a Republican or a conservative candidate. Why not throw an endorsement there? All politics is local. Everything starts in your backyard. Or why can't we have everybody work together with all these Republican governors? I've been hearing stuff about this, too. Apparently, there's a lot of egos in this. Apparently, people have been getting mad if some people send plane loads of illegal entrants to Martha's Vineyard. Why are you smiling? Kane's like, you're going to get slapped. Because I'm done with this. Let me tell you guys. Let me just be real honest with you. I have always been straightforward with you guys from the get-go. You'll know if I like a potential candidate or not. But there's one thing that I don't do, no matter how much I like or dislike, I will dislike a candidate. I will call balls and strikes. Because nobody made me, and I work hard to keep it that way. And because I just don't like D.C. I mean, I don't need to have that power adjacency. I'm doing just fine right where I am. So I just, Keynes is dying, because it's true. I heard it from too many people. There are a lot of egos involved in some of this, and I've heard some people were getting mad that some leadership were sending planes of illegal entrants to Martha's Vineyard because they didn't come up with it, and therefore they just weren't going to be working too well with other people in leadership anymore. Not kidding. I'm hearing this like, are you? And I had to go to a couple of other people to get some more insight on it. Now, that's the problem with politics. You know, if you just work hard and you serve the people remember. They remember who came in clutch. The people remember who was the individual that was raising hell over what the federal government was doing or trying to do to them. They remember. The one thing that politicians fail themselves to remember is that the number one rule when it comes to running for office is that people want to know, what have you done for me lately? Not just a body of work, it is lately. Because you have to keep on delivering and keep on delivering and keep on. It's not just a one and done. So I'm hearing some of this stuff over this weekend. This is why I'm in a sassy, sour mood today, because you hear this all weekend and you're like, you gotta be kidding me. This is why I stay away from stuff, because I get mad. I hear this and I'm like, I get angry. I like to give people a little bit of time, you know, to talk to me or answer me, you know, before I go hog wild on air and just spilling tea everywhere. This made me angry, though, hearing some of this stuff. You could have all Republican leadership across the country working together on this and just clowning Democrats on some of their bad policies. But oh no, someone gets upset. Some people get upset because this wasn't their idea and they got to pull out of it. Or they don't want to cooperate anymore. This is what's wrong with politics. If you're too good to serve, you ain't good enough to lead. Now, I'm going to get hate mail. It's all right. Make sure just, you know, Kane will get it this time, though. I won't get it. Kane will get it. We have more to come. Man, sometimes I just, you know, it's weird. It's a weird industry. And it's weird when you are in this industry. And I came into politics as a street activist, like hardcore street activist. And a commentator, I went to J school, got a worthless, totally worthless degree, entirely worthless. And the only good class I ever had was logic. But it's weird to come at it from this perspective and not through like a Washington, D.C. insider kind of campaign perspective, because it's, you just never, ever acclimate to the weirdness of the political sphere. You never do. Black Rifle Coffee Company set out on a mission to make the best cup of coffee that's ever hit your mug. And I think they've hit that mission straight on. Their dream has been to sell enough premium coffee to build a support network for veterans, first responders, and law enforcement. And thanks to your support, that dream has come true. Black Rifle Coffee is roasted by a veteran-led team of brilliant coffee graders who work tirelessly to roast and bag the highest quality coffee here in America. And the coffee is truly one of a kind and my favorite. Your support has helped Black Rifle Coffee Company expand their team of active duty service members, veterans, and veteran family members. And they were able to donate over 120,000 bags of coffee to veterans and first responders in 2022. Visit blackriflecoffee.com/Dana and use my code Dana at checkout for 20% off your purchase and your first coffee club order. That's blackriflecoffee.com/Dana. Use code Dana and also look for Black Rifle Coffee in grocery and convenience stores. Black Rifle Coffee, America's coffee.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five, brought to you by Kel-Tec.
So, guitarist, songwriter, and the last original member of Lynyrd Skynyrd, Gary Rossington, has passed away on Sunday. He was 71 years old. No other details were given. He survived that plane crash, 77. He survived a plane crash that famously killed four members of the rock band, including Ronnie Van Zant. But he was the one who apparently, he co-wrote Free Bird, a whole bunch of other tracks as well. But man, that's, Kane said that there were two other, like in the past couple of weeks, that's like the third of the musicians. Yeah, day. So that would be the trifecta from Wong. Also, 35 people were arrested after rioters set fire to construction equipment and attacked police. We're going to talk a little bit about this. This is Atlanta Police Department. There was a video of it. Arson, it was clearly planned, obviously. And they said that they, I mean, they were, I mean, people who were in the black block gear and all this kind of stuff. And yeah, there's going to be some trouble from that. In addition to that, bad news for Democrats, more Asian American voters are the latest group to move to the right, joining Hispanic and black voters. Oh boy, trouble for Democrats coming up. We'll talk. Stay with us. When you see judicial rot running rampant and American companies embracing insanity and wokery, you got to fight back, starting with the way that we spend our money. So for years, big mobile companies have dumped millions into leftist causes, and you know, we just kind of took it because another option didn't exist. Well, now one does. Patriot Mobile is America's only Christian conservative wireless provider, and they offer dependable nationwide coverage on all three major networks, so you get the best possible service in your area without the woke problem. Propaganda. And when you switch to Patriot Mobile, you support free speech and religious freedom, the sanctity of life, Second Amendment, and our military veterans and first responders. Their 100% U.S.-based customer service team makes switching easy. Visit patriotmobile.com/Dana or call them at 878-PATRIOT and get free activation today with offer code Dana. Ask about their coverage guarantee as well. patriotmobile.com/Dana or call 878-PATRIOT. patriotmobile.com/Dana or call 878-PATRIOT.
So I think there's a difference between catching somebody in a criminal act and catching them in a politically problematic act. I mean, as I read that transcript, this was a 2020 interview, and they're asking current Secretary Blinken about events that occurred in 2015. Now, as you said, he clearly says no. They ask him whether or not he had any conversations. He says, not that I recall. And then they move and they say, how about emails or texts? And he says flat out no. Now, whether, you know, clearly, and they say they found information off of Hunter Biden's laptop that clearly shows correspondence back and forth between now Secretary Blinken and Hunter Biden. If that's accurate, that's still a long way from being a violation of the law.
My favorite thing about this whole video, first off, welcome back to the program. Dana Lash with you is, oh, my gosh, I totally spaced on his name.
Chris Cuomo?
No, the other dude on there.
Carville.
James Carville. Who I used to, I was, when I was the token conservative at CNN, he was on with me all the time. He was actually very nice. And he hated some of the same people I hated, which made us friends. He will not wear LSU gear. He will physically, he will fight like the vice president of standards and practices over it. It is so funny that he was all decked out in his gear. He just doesn't even care. But that was Peter Strzok, the disgraced FBI agent that CNN still loves to have on, right? And wait, no, not CNN. That was, what's his face's? The other Cuomo, the spare, his little whatever that is, the news name. I don't even know what that is. But Peter Strzok, the disgraced FBI agent who looks like the elf on a shelf in a suit. He does. He was the guy, remember, I'll never forget the hearing that turned into a gif where he like fidgeted in his seat like a weirdo who was texting Lisa Page, the other FBI agent, and discussing how they wanted to stop the 2016 election, et cetera, et cetera. He's saying that it's not a big deal. You know, if Antony Blinken lied under oath, it's not a huge deal. I mean, he's facing questions because apparently, you know, he was misleading members of Congress about Hunter. It seemed like he was closer to Hunter Biden than he was Joe, than he was Dad Joe. I mean, when you go back and look at some of the emails. Now, if he did lie, then that's perjury. But see, Peter Strzok has to defend Antony Blinken testifying in 2020 that he never emailed Hunter Biden, even though he did. Because then he would incriminate himself or give credence to his wrongdoing, which he denies to this day. So that's why he said the whole, well, there's the difference between catching someone in a criminal act and catching them in a politically problematic act. Oh, we're not doing what is. We're not doing that. And as Kane notes out, Kane notes, they threw the book at General Mike Flynn.
For him saying, I don't recall.
And he literally did not recall. He didn't purposefully lie. He just didn't remember. And they said, oh, well, that's just like lying. So that's what his whole thing came down to. It's D different. There's a D difference. I mean, he was, you know, Peter Strzok, he was FBI. So he's defending. This is why you can't, you know, they will always justify whatever means because it serves the end. If it's the measure of whether it is right and good isn't determined by our actual, you know, definition of what is right and our definition, you know, of morality, of expectation of ethics or what we define as good. No, their measure is whether or not it advances the end. If it serves their ultimate goal, then it is justified. Then it's good because it serves the ultimate goal. It doesn't really matter. I mean, if it violates a law, but it serves a bigger purpose. So that's inconsequential. That's wild. And he sits there and he's just so sanctimonious about it. It's still perjury. It's not just problematic. That's the wrong P. It's perjury. Perjury. It's not politically problematic act. It's perjury. Antony Blinken perjured himself. That's the bottom line of it. I mean, there's no getting around it. Good heavens. Now, a couple of other things. I saw this morning. This is a Daily Caller piece about, of all places, Nordstrom is leaving San Francisco. They're closing up shop. They're one of the latest, but they're a huge business. They're closing both of their San Francisco locations and the off the rack, the Nordstrom rack. Wait, it's like Saks off the rack fifth. Nordstrom rack. They're closing that one too. According to the San Francisco Standard, that's about 357,000 square feet. So they're closing these stores. They're not renewing its lease obligations. And they said that the reason that they cited was a deteriorating situation. I mean, which meant, oh my gosh, the crime and vagrancy is out of control. Right. Feces and needles everywhere, as far as the eye can see. They said they're done dealing with it. So they're leaving. That's like the 20th business that's left in what, the past like year and a half, almost 2 years now, I guess.
Close the Nordstrom pipeline.
Whole Foods left. Yeah, the Nordstrom pipeline that Karine Jean-Pierre believes exists. Not the Nord Stream. No, no, no. The Nordstrom. So it's like when you order on Nordstrom, like all your stuff comes in the pipeline. Whole Foods shut down. Now think about this. This is San Francisco. What do you think? Now, normally, if I would ask this like 10 years ago or 5 years ago, your answer would be different. If I say, what do you think of, Kane, what do you think of when I say San Francisco now?
Now?
Now.
Now it's just horrific. Everything that we've seen in the
what
past.
What comes to mind? What is the image in your mind when I say San Francisco?
You mean needles, feces, lots of hills, maybe even needles and feces rolling down hills.
Okay. Now, if I were to ask you 10 years ago, then what would you think? If I would 10 years ago, if I would say, Kane, like, what comes in your mind when I say San Francisco?
I'd be like the bay, you know, the hippies. Bridge, you know, just the San Francisco treat, Rice-A-Roni, maybe.
You know, the other thing, too, I blame the old hippies there. I think there's a difference in type of hippie. By the way, we have some of our audience includes, and I'm going to say it because this is how they identify themselves, boomer hippies. Yep. But they always insist that they're the good boomer hippies, which I believe this. I believe some of the hippies are actually classical liberals like Tocqueville, and they want to be left alone. They want to organically farm, and they want to drink on pasteurized milk, and they want to do whatever they want to do. They want to weave their sandals out of hemp. That's fine. They want to live their lives and not bother nobody. Then you got these hippies that gave birth to the like neo-Puritan hippies. They're not even hippies anymore. And they want the man in every aspect of their lives. By the way, think about this for a minute. Because I don't really necessarily think this is a Gen X thing. Gen X were used to being overlooked, forgotten about. And I think it's like millennials, younger millennials, not, you know, older millennials, but younger millennials. That how do you go from being a hippie boomer? Because a lot of the millennials were from younger boomers. How do you go from like being the hippie, you know, hippie generation to raising the antithesis of that? Like you are against the man, but now you want more of the man. How does that happen? That fascinates me, actually, from a sociological perspective.
I have a take on that.
Okay, yes.
Is because, isn't it natural for you to rebel against your parents?
I guess so, to a certain extent.
So, in my mind, I think that this generation saw their parents who were rightfully against, you know, overreaching of government and things of that nature, and they've worked to be not their parents. And I think that's how it's played out.
And I think, too, I'd add to that, I think that the rebelling against your parents isn't because you're trying to be an activist or something. I think it's you're trying to find your identity. Kids trying to find their identity. They want to define themselves their own. Like, for instance, my husband and I, you know, we're retired goth kids. And my younger son likes to wear black, and has more of the aesthetic of us than my older son does. My older son thinks it's ridiculous. And he's just like, I am so not into that. Like, he's very, my younger one, when he was a lot younger, his rebellion was to basically try to be Alex P. Keaton, in both visually and he is him mentally. But he was like very suit and hat. Like he was very, now he's more of our aesthetic, way more. But when he was younger, that was how he rebelled. He was a prep. I didn't know how to deal with that. He would come home and ask because he would do stuff with his friends on the weekends. Because they have a uniform at school, and he would be like, oh, his like friends would have like a preppy kind of shirt, and I don't know, it was like some prep brand. I don't even know where to get those clothes. I literally buy what I'm wearing right now. I got for free at my gun range, and I wear black t-shirts all the time because I buy them in bulk. In some ways, I'm like the dream shopper. I buy t-shirts in bulk in black, and when I want to dye them, when they start to fade, throw them in a top loader with dye. There, you're welcome. Because I hate buying the same thing. I literally will wear the same thing over and over again because I can't stand trying to figure that stuff out. It's annoying. I hate shopping. I hate it to death. I just want to wear the same thing every day and I'd be happy. But you guys would complain. I hear that. I hear it. You're like, why don't you wear some color? Because I can't dress myself and I won't hire a stylist. That's why. So anyway, long story short, kids rebel. I get it. And so now he's not like that. So I guess that to your point, Kane, they decided to go and be little minions of the man because their parents were very opposite that. Right. Gosh, they have to be disappointed. There's certain things I just wouldn't allow, right? I just won't allow in my house. I would not have allowed, I gotta say, I would not have allowed it to get that far. I'd be like, that's detrimental to your well-being. Knock it off. Like I taught my kid about taxes. Like when we gave, when they would do work around the house, because I told you I didn't give allowances. And I would literally, they'd have to write the little check and they'd come to the bank of mom and I would give them after I took taxes out and they were appalled. And I'm like, that's taxes. I'm like, don't vote Democrat then. That's how I ran my, and they were like, oh, but that's how we did it. Yeah. Their friends' parents thought I was nuts, but you know what? Now look at them. Yeah. Mm-hmm. They're very responsible kids. They understand money.
You can't expect that reality from media.
Exactly. But there's certain things I just will not allow. You know, I told my kids, I'm like, I'm not going to tell you who to vote for, but if you vote for someone that raises my taxes, if you vote for CRT and DEI, I will take it out on you in terms of how you are supported. That will expedite how soon you are out on your ass in the real world. There are consequences to elections. That's what I've told them. I'm like, I'm not going to tell you how to vote, but I'll know because you are horrible liars. I will know. So there's just some things I won't allow. Like if I was a boomer, I would kick the crap out of my kid if they were going to turn into like a minion for the man. If they're going to go out there, we want more government. Shut up. Oh, my gosh. I would have beaten you to death in the street. No way. There's just certain things I just will not allow because I'm the parent. It's a mom-tatorship. There's no freedom in this house. This isn't a republic. I don't even acknowledge that it's a democracy. Come on. I just don't understand how the old hippies got millennials. Steve, you're the only one we like. I don't get it. How does this happen? Your parents did it right, Kane. Because your parents are boomers.
Yep.
And they didn't raise you to be a yes man for the man.
No, as a matter of fact, I never really...
What did they do different?
I never really got anything politically hammered into my head until I at least showed some understanding of it, like in my teens, right? So none of this was burdened by... Oh, unburdened by what has been.
Oh my gosh, I hate you.
I wasn't burdened by, as a kid, with... you know, outrageous emotions and lack of understanding and then trying to then fit in this right. political narrative. To me, it just doesn't work. Your emotions get too crazy. But when you get a little older, I think that's what it is. Yeah. You don't want to get kids involved in politics too soon.
True. Yeah. Yeah, I can't stand that when people are like, yeah, I can't do that. I've told you guys before, we've had like groups that have wanted the kids to get involved in stuff. And especially the oldest, they're out and they're like, oh, you should have, you know, him come and get involved in this. And I'm like, You only want him because you think it's because of his, you know, he's my kid. I'm like, he doesn't pay taxes. This kid doesn't know nothing. I'm like, I mean, he does, but no, he's not ready for this. I'm not putting him out there. It's not happening. He's got to get tested. He's got to get tested more. But I just, that is a thing that absolutely fascinates me with us. And I know we were talking, I didn't mean to like totally go off into the... You know, I had all this whole other stuff, wokery, and we got to talk about, you know, gas stoves and all this other stuff. But I just, that absolutely fascinates me. It really does. All right, we got to move because otherwise we're going to go to commercial and I won't be able to control it. I have some exciting news for those of you who wish that you could be nearer to Hillsdale College. Now, you can be a part of Hillsdale, no matter where you are in the world. In addition to their free online courses, Hillsdale College has created something new, the Hillsdale College Podcast Network. It allows you to learn even more from Hillsdale anywhere at any time. And on the Hillsdale College Podcast Network, you'll hear podcasts that feature conversations with Hillsdale College faculty, staff, friends, alumni, as well as visiting speakers and authors discussing everything from philosophy to theology to history, economics, politics, and current events. Listen to hundreds of episodes on the network, from the Hillsdale Dialogues to the radio-free Hillsdale Hour to the Larry Arn Show, all for free. Get informed and entertained at dana4hillsdale.com. That's dana4hillsdale.com, and learn more about their free online courses and the new Hillsdale College Podcast Network. That's dana4hillsdale.com. Hillsdale College, developing minds, changing hearts.
Like sands through the hourglass, so are the days of the United States.
Well, at EPA, we've built environmental justice into our very DNA. And so, number one, we have some very concrete metrics that are attached to this $27 billion to be sure that disadvantaged communities and those who are disproportionately impacted have access to this capital.
What is environmental justice? For the trees. What is that, though, for real? Like, I'm wanting to know.
Justice for the environment, Dana.
But what does that mean? Like, people throw out these stupid words, and they never mean what they actually intend on meaning. They never actually mean that. Hey, how about you focus, like, on actual justice?
Yeah.
Like, the criminals that are being repeatedly let go in these, like, majorly run Democrat cities. I mean, that might be, you know, that might be something to consider. Just, you know, FYI, might be something. So, coming up, this is what we got for you. We got to get into some wokery because the Navy, they have some new digital outreach, guys. Also, in New York, what is it? From starting in 2026, they're going to start phasing the ban in, banning gas stoves and furnaces in New York. They passed that. That's, yeah, because it never gets cold up there, and electric performs so well. Good heavens. We got a lot more on the way. Stick with us. Second hour up next.
We've got a crisis when it comes to roadway fatalities in America. We lose about 40,000 people every year. It's a level that's comparable to gun violence. And we see a lot of racial disparities. Black and brown Americans, tribal citizens, and rural residents much more likely to lose their lives, whether it's in a car or as a pedestrian being hit by a car. There are a lot of reasons related to discrimination, related to even the ways that roads are designed and built. Who has access to a safe street design that's got crosswalks and good lighting? Who doesn't have that access? That can drive disparities. And we have a responsibility to...
Does anybody want to tell Secretary Mayor Poot where a lot of that money comes from? Yeah, it's your property taxes. It's local. Does he not understand this? He's one of the stupidest people alive. Welcome. I'm not. No, it's accurate. I would be lying otherwise. Welcome back to the program. Top of the second hour. Dana Lash with you. You can listen coast to coast on an affiliate in your area. You can also stream the show. You can watch it, the simulcast of the radio show, via YouTube, Facebook, the discussion happening at YouTube, as well as Channel 347 DirecTV. He's sitting there across from Al Sharpton, sucking up to Al Sharpton. And he's saying, you know, even the designs of roads are racist. You know, crosswalks and stuff. Does he not understand how things are funded locally within your municipality? Lighting? Does he think that's a federal government issue? A street light on a corner in your town? He thinks it's a federal issue? It's a local issue, you moron. It's something that is decided locally. It's determined locally through tax dollars and your property taxes, how that support. Oh my gosh. This is basic stuff. One of my biggest pet peeves in life, and nothing makes me madder than when I have to explain stupid things to people who should know better. Completely obvious things, like how property taxes work, how people determine where crosswalks go, and how they're paid for. It's not a federal issue. If he's upset it's racist that there are some areas that don't have crosswalks, I bet you $1,000,000 to 1 that it's Democrat leadership in that area. So why not ask the leadership in that area? Why aren't they doing their jobs? That's how this works. Roads are racist. That's all this guy has. He has no expertise at all whatsoever in any kind of engineering. He has no background in engineering, no background in city planning, no background in transportation. He was hired because he sleeps with dudes. It's true. He was hired because it was a diversity hire for the administration. And they wanted to shield themselves from any accusations of bigotry. So they're like, well, he's gay. Let's put him here. He has no qualifications for anything else. He was barely qualified to be mayor of one of the smaller towns in Indiana, South Bend, which is, he wouldn't have been able to be competitive anywhere else outside of South Bend because it's surrounded by red. So they put him here. He got it because he's gay. Well, does he know anything about transportation? Well, he sleeps with dudes, so I don't know. But he does. There's that. Oh, that's a great qualification. That means he understands all the intricacies of planning and road construction and engineering, etc. I mean, obviously, it translates to that. It's like the wild card in Uno. You can do whatever, right? That's how they looked at it. I it's not wrong. It's not a lie. Good heavens. This is the stupidity of where we of our politics. Well, it's because he is just so, I mean, we had, how many other train wrecks have we had like in the past couple of weeks?
At least 5 or 6.
Yeah. So are we going to have like lanes of equity on the highways? I'm just wondering so he thinks that we'll reduce somehow traffic fatalities if racism goes away, that racism is the driving factor of traffic fatalities. I mean, I'm really working hard to try to make this make sense in my head. I'm coming up a little short here.
Me too.
So is he, or here's the other thing. Is he saying that minorities are bad drivers in general?
Oh, interesting.
I feel like that's a legitimate question. That seems kind of racist. Because it seems like he's saying that it's just, you know, people of color are bad drivers. Minorities are just horrible drivers. That's what it is. That's what it sounds like he's saying. That's honestly, that makes more sense. Is that why rioters target cars? I mean, I'm just, you know, just a question in passing. Just, you know, just wonder. I just wondered. I was just asking. So according to the press conference, I'll just give you a quick update on that. There were 2 criminal complaints about China. They're announcing 3 cases against China. They had 30 officers of China's PD and 2 New York residents. Apparently they were violating law. Remember this whole thing where they had these secret police? China had secret police offices throughout the United States, and they were going after Chinese nationals. It's related to this. So apparently that's what the cases are related to. We'll bring you any audio or more information as we get it. All right, so a few other things to get in on here that we must discuss is this whole situation with, I wanted to get into some of the Anheuser-Busch stuff here, and we're also going to get into some of the Republican primary stuff, and we're also going to get in on the, well, which we're going to get in right now, is this issue of woke military. So the military, this was on Twitter over the weekend. In Bahrain, the Navy told sailors that they talked to their children at age 12 about gender, identity, sex, STDs, pregnancy, etc., without notifying parents. When asked if the Navy's policy circumvents a right to know, they answered yes. Nicole Benson, a Navy nurse practitioner, she was saying that she seems to be suggesting that parents were not, if they're not accepting of the trans agenda, that they're driving suicides. So they were talking about this in the Navy. So for people who think that the military isn't woke, well, here's further examples that it is. It is insane. Is this like an official Department of Defense thing? I mean, I'm curious as to whether or not this is a policy that's shared across, you know, all of the branches. And people wonder, too, why military recruitment is down. They wonder why military recruitment is down. It's because of all of the wokery. Because everything is so ridiculous. Everything is so stupid. I mean, hell, roads are racist now. By the way, it would be like saying that NASCAR is just a murder machine for white people, since more white people drive cars than minorities in NASCAR. Just was thinking about this. So this situation with we've heard stuff like this in the military before, the level of wokery. And this is not, I mean, I just can't believe this is something that's being discussed. And this is in Bahrain in a Navy presentation. It was caught on video. This Navy nurse practitioner, Nicole Benson, suggesting that parents being unaccepting of the trans agenda is the reason that they have suicides. Robbie Starbuck had posted this video on Twitter. And it looks like the government is actively engaged in promoting this kind of dysphoria. Meanwhile, you have China that's practicing drills on Taiwan, floating rumors of it's not a if but when. We have the petrodollar tanking, and this is what our military is focusing on. Interesting. Yes, of course they're going woke. CVS is telling employees to jump on the preferred pronoun train with new gender guidelines. Oh boy. Oh boy is right. This is all more of the, the DEI. They said employees must use preferred pronouns and they can use the bathrooms that reflect their blah, 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 all that stuff. You can, you can use the bathroom that reflects your identity. And these guidelines, it's their official CVS health policy. They said that the transition guide, I mean, it is a requirement. It mandates the preferred pronoun usage, etc. Maybe they could just do something about the length of their receipts first. And then, move on to some other things. That'd be great. Whew. But another one of the latest company to go along with this. They also get into appropriate medical care for your transition. They get into hormone replacement therapy, etc., etc. All kinds of stuff. They have a section titled Guidelines for Supporting a Colleague Who's Transitioning. And it tells employees, ask colleagues to let them know if they say or do anything that makes them uncomfortable. Don't make assumptions about a person's gender. This is so stupid. And they talk about disrespectful terms that violate CVS's policy against discrimination. Like, you can't dead name anyone. You can't. Is it dead gender someone? Or no, it's misgender. You can't, quote unquote, misgender someone. So you can't, you have to lie and you have to go along with the lie, or you could use your job and not pay your bills if you don't go along with someone else's cosplay. Because that's where we are. If you don't affirm someone else's cosplay, and affirm means adopt, then you could lose your job and your life could be ruined because you don't go along. Even if you're a woman, if you don't go along with the cosplay. They went after Judy Blume, by the way, over the weekend, too. I saw that. Judy Blume said something in defense of J.K. Rowling, and everybody came for Judy Blume. All the hateful, violent trans activists, they went for Judy Blume. Because she dared to say that J.K. Rowling was right, that women exist. We live in a stupid time. So we were just saying that apparently they announced the Department of Justice announced some cases against China. This goes back to that thing we've discussed before, where you had these like Chinese police departments, commie police departments secretly in the United States harassing Chinese nationals. And so that's what the cases are related to. We'll bring you any more information as we get it. And also coming up, the Republican Party needs to not bail on the so-called culture war. I'm going to use this as a jumping off point, this New York Times piece that blamed the quote unquote religious right. They said that they needed a new cause after, I guess, the LGB or whatever stuff. And so now they were the ones who created this trans issue. That it's the religious right that did. The left has been using that phrase for forever. We're going to use that as a jumping off point because there are some Republicans that are now apparently, either buying into the leftist narrative, or they're just showing people that they only go so far where it concerns actual limited government ideals. So we're going to get into all of that and more.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
All right. So first up, this is kind of wild. A man with gunshot wounds drove himself to a Whataburger. That actually happened over the weekend in San Antonio. And the dude was shot in the chest and he drove himself to a Whataburger. And when the officers got to the restaurant, they did not find him. But witnesses say that there was a white Mercedes that belonged to the guy in the parking lot. Police say a friend picked him up from the Whataburger and drove him to an entrance of Lackland Air Force Base. So they took the guy to the hospital. He's in critical condition. No word what led. There's no other information about it. It's a wild story. Morgan Freeman calls Black History Month in African American terms an insult. This is, man, Morgan Freeman doesn't play around. He said that he slammed the term Saturday, saying that both were an insult. He told the Sunday Times that the observance, which takes place every February, he says that it has a negative connotation to him and it relegates his culture to just 4 weeks. He says, two things I can say publicly that I do not like. He says, quote, Black History Month is an insult. You're going to relegate my history to a month? And then he says African-American is an insult. He goes, I don't subscribe to that title. He says black people have had different titles all the way back. He goes, I don't know how these things get such a grip that everyone uses African-American. He goes, what does it really mean? Ooh, I remember when he did that 60 Minutes thing and he said, quit talking about race. He's like, that's what divides when you're constantly obsessing over it. I mean, there's some truth there. Oh, man. A man held in a disgusting Georgia jail cell. He died. He died after he was eaten alive by insects and bed bugs. There are photos of the cell and it looks really nasty. It was in Fulton County Jail in September of last year. They said that it was not, that the cell was not fit for a diseased animal, the lawyer said. And so they are litigating this. They said he had a mental illness. They had to take him to the medical observation unit, but they found him in the cell, and the cell looks bad. It is bad. I don't even want to show those photos on the simulcast. It's very bad. So they're litigating that. How do you have it get to that situation in the cells themselves? So there's a piece over at The Hill asking, is there a worldwide run on the Bank of the United States of America? Which I think is good. I'm going to put this in your email prep because now this is a comparison. It discusses the petrodollar. It discusses Chinese currency, all of this. And I think that there's something to that for sure. Like I said, I want to put this in your email prep list for you subscribers. Median rent reaches an all-time high. This is eye-watering. It's almost $4,200 a month. Welcome back to the radio show. Dana Lash here. Let's play some audio. Audio soundbite 4, please. Immigration.
The violence aspect of it. Now Americans are being slaughtered. Would President Biden be taking the same approach if it was Al-Qaeda or ISIS operating just across the border from an American city?
The president takes this very seriously. He takes this very seriously. The FBI and other agencies have been on top of this from day one. And so that's what he's going to continue to do. When it comes to Americans' lives and when it comes to the safety of Americans, the president's always going to make sure that is a top priority.
How? I'm just curious how he's going to do that. Welcome back to the program, Dana Lash here. How is he exactly going to do that? This comes on the heels of the shooting and the kidnapping of 4 Americans that took place just over the border. Just this, you know, past few days. I mean, that's this issue at the southern border is so horrible. As I wrote in the prep email that you received, if you sign up for the email newsletter, it's so bad that it's causing him to reconsider Title 42. But no one believes that. I mean, that's just the stuff that she's just saying there at the press conference. No one actually believes that this administration is in any way at all whatsoever prioritizing anybody's safety and well-being. I mean, this was right after. I mean, this was like right by the border that this took place. I mean, who in the world believes that this administration has absolutely anything under control? Who believes that they have seizures of fentanyl at the border? They're at all-time highs. Fentanyl is the leading cause of death now for Americans between the ages of 18 and 45. I mean, no one believes this. I don't even, what's the point of even sending anybody out there to be the spokesperson for your administration if you can't at all be honest with people about the state of things? What is the point of it? What's the point of any of it? If you can't be honest about it, what's the point? She just goes out there, well, you know, he's doing everything he can to keep people safe. He's doing everything he can to make sure that, no, he's not. I mean, good grief. How many pounds are they actually seizing every single week at the border of fentanyl? She actually said in audio, she said that fentanyl was at an all-time low. The seizures were at an all-time low. Nobody believes that either. Peter Ducey had asked, cartels kill Americans on this side of the border with drugs. Now they're killing Americans on the other side. Why is the president so comfortable with cartels? She's like, well, let's be clear. You know, the seizure of fentanyl is at historic lows. That was the audio soundbite. And people were wondering, did she mean to say that? Because nobody believes it. Not a single person believes that. I think that was one of her worst, appearances before the press. Because she had said something as well. Well, would Biden ever consider, you know, causing the U.S. military to disrupt cartel operations? And she goes, she says, quote, I'm just not going to get into the military and how it's being used. Curtis Hawk has some great audio. So, I mean, that's, she's not going to get into any of that. So that means nothing's going to change. It's just status quo ongoing. A couple of other things I want to make sure that we're getting into as well. So this, because I don't think I got to this the last time. This is an actual headline that's at the New York Times. I can't believe this is an actual headline, but it is. The headline is, Black Equestrians Want to Be Safe, But They Can't Find Helmets. It's a real headline. They say for Black riders with natural hair, finding a helmet that fits can be virtually impossible. Some are trying to raise awareness of the problem, but manufacturers say it's not a simple fix. When I first saw this, it looked like it was a screen grab, and I thought it was satirical. I did not think that it was a real. So now, because remember, everything's racist, like parks are racist, everything's racist and divided. That this also, by the way, sounds like one of the most first world problems I've ever heard of. I mean, an absolute first world problem. Well, you know how expensive, all of that is? The equestrian world is one of the most, this is one of the most expensive hobbies you could have. And the piece over at the New York Times focuses on it gets into this girl named Chanel Robin. She's been riding horses most of her life, etc. She's in Bradford, Ontario. And she talks about her pony in this whole piece. And, you know, she says, she talks about what it is to be black and be an equestrian, which I just don't, why does everything have to be so divided? And then people were talking about finding a helmet that fits, because she said she ended up having her hair styled in locks. And as a result, it made it difficult for her to put a helmet on and all of this stuff. And now the New York Times is like, wow, there's no helmets that can fit properly. This is another barrier to full inclusion. They act like it's the equestrian world that is making it to where no one can, that they're disallowing helmets that do this. It's the stupidest thing I've ever read. I mean, because it's an opportunity for capitalism, for a company to make one. And so they have some riders in California, et cetera, who've been, and apparently I just can't, it just is so, this is just, it seems like a problem that has an easy fix. But the New York Times is taking it to mean that there is not ever full inclusion. Do you know what the inclusion issue is here? It's not whether someone is black or white. It's whether they're rich or poor, because this is such an expensive sport. It is such an expensive sport. So they get into the safety standards and all of this stuff. And, you know, they were talking about how they want to get around the regulations. And this is the other thing that the New York Times piece kind of just skates by, because one of the manufacturers was saying that one of the worries that companies have is nothing to do with companies. The worry is that the restrictions and the regulations that go along with helmet development, because everything is so regulated 6 ways to Sunday in this country, that the restrictions and regulations as it pertains to the development of new or newly designed helmets, that could actually interfere with the manufacturing process, meaning it might take them a while to get out. Then you have to go and they apparently have to run it by the regulatory outfit and make sure that it meets federal safety standards, all this kind of stuff. And the other thing too is that one of the manufacturers was incredibly honest, and they said, because they didn't think it was a manufacturing issue, it sounds like a regulatory issue, which has nothing to do with the world of equestrianism. But they also said, well, this whole process would take years of development as well. It could take years of development, depending on how much pushback they get, all this stuff. You wouldn't believe like the amount, and this is true because it's considered like a safety device. It's not a fashion accessory. A helmet's considered a safety device. And so it does, especially with any kind of regulated sport, you have to go through. That's the nature of the way this is. I mean, that's just it. And so it doesn't have anything to do with racism. It doesn't have anything to do with division. It doesn't have anything to do with bigotry. That's just the way it is. And one of the manufacturers was incredibly honest and said, well, you know, this also could potentially drive up the cost for a product for which there might not be as much demand. If it's a special type of helmet that specifically is constructed to accommodate a specific hairstyle. Not everything is racist. Not everything is bigoted. I wish the sweet meteor of death would come and obliterate this planet into 1,000,000,000 grains of dust, because I cannot find a redeeming factor at all on this rock. Every one of these stupid headlines is designed to drive division. Every single one. And some people were saying if it's, you know, an unusual hairstyle, or if it's not a hairstyle that, you know, they act like, oh, we just made helmets for just white people. That's the whole way. I mean, literally, one of the subheads of this piece is, quote, this sport isn't designed for us. Literally, that's where the New York Times is going with us. As if you didn't think racist parks were bad enough. Now you have this. They say that the whole design of it. In fact, one actual quote is this. And they aren't just talking about equestrianism. Quote, sports were only developed for white people, and they only continue to keep white people protected. Or they continue to keep white people protected. That's literally the quote. It is. That's the whole point. That's what the New York Times wanted to accomplish with this piece. Everything's racist. We'll just end equestrianism then. Just to end it then. Let's go ahead and end all fun things. If we find one thing that's wrong with anything, end it. But you know what? If we're going to approach it that way, I think that should go to personally with every single person. Just have it across the board. I'm just so done with this. Everyone is a victim. Everyone is a victim. Everyone believes the world is out to get them. In some cases it is. But not in every case. Actual headline. We all are dumber for the New York Times having published this into the human record. And we wonder why aliens, you know what, if I was an alien and I came across our planet, I wouldn't want to get near it either. I would be afraid that whatever stupidity that is roiling the earth would be catching. Mm-mm-mm. Now, the budget plan that the president's going to drop tomorrow, we're going to talk a little bit more about that, because there's lots of new taxes in it. I don't know if y'all know, there's a lot of new taxes in this. They got to make sure that Medicare is funded for a couple of decades. They can't stop spending anywhere else, which means that other people, somebody, somewhere has to pay for it. You will pay. You will be made to pay. We're going to get into that. And also, this story that I talked about on Jesse Waters. So now the feds have opened up an investigation. And they were, I don't know why he was saying that they were Venezuelan, because they were Honduran. Two illegal entrants, Honduran nationals, they were in Nebraska and they shot and killed a bald eagle to eat it for dinner. No. Now, You have the 1940 Bald and Golden Eagle Protection Act. That's a federal law that makes, like, do you know that it's actually illegal? You can't even, if you find an eagle feather on the ground, you can't even pick it up. That's a $5,000 fine. Did you know that?
I didn't.
$5,000 fine if you just so much as pick up an eagle feather. Now, I mean, I mean, I know of birds, but I don't know all the different types of birds. I wouldn't know if I was picking up an eagle feather or not. I really wouldn't know. But it didn't. That's irrelevant. There was a guy last year who got 3 felony charges for simply selling eagle feathers. And there was another guy who this was a few years back. His family, one of their family heirlooms was Geronimo's actual headdress, because when Geronimo, he ended up giving his moccasins and his headdress to 2 people with the U.S. government that were actually nice and that befriended him. And the Demings family was one of them. And that headdress that he gave them went through their family. And apparently the guy was considering selling it to a museum or something like that. But then the feds came in and they charged him with a felony, because you can't do that. Can't do it, because apparently he acquired it after that act, the 1940 act. So it's not, that's how it works. So the crazy thing about this story with these 2 Honduran nationals in Nebraska is that the federal government ignored calls from local law enforcement to charge them so they could hold them, because the only thing that local law enforcement could get them on were, they needed the feds to bring charges, were a couple of misdemeanors.
It's his life mission to make bad decisions. It's time for Florida Man.
Mm-hmm. So they're freaking out in Fort Lauderdale. According to the Florida Sun Sentinel, the mayor decries what he says is a creeping level of hate. Vandals defaced an Alphabet Pride flag that was painted on the street just off Fort Lauderdale Beach. And you know what's on it? There are skid marks on it.
On a road?
On a road.
No.
Skid marks are on paint on a road.
No.
No. Why did you put your thing on a thing that cars drive on? I don't know. It's Fort Lauderdale's mayor. So they're mad, and they said that it's evidence of hatred and bigotry in the Fort Lauderdale community because someone drove over the painted rainbow that they put on the street and left tire marks on it. Oh no! Who could have thought that that could have happened to something that you put on a road? I am so shocked. Oh, much surprise. Moving on. Can you tell how shocked I am? It's the dumbest thing I've ever heard in my life. These people are just ridiculous. I don't know why, Florida man was arrested after dumping 30 mattress box springs along a street. Monroe County Waste Management told the sheriff's office that it weighed more than 1,700 pounds. It was just dumped right on Front Street there. It said they all came from a Key West motel. And a manager there said that he hired a guy named Michael Herrera to replace the beds at the hotel. So Herrera just took the mattresses and literally dumped them on the street. 1,700 pounds of worth. He was charged with illegal dumping. Dumps them right on the street where people pass by and can see them. I don't know. These people. I have one tomorrow that I'll tell you about, how there was a stripper arrested for throwing money at a man. I think that's supposed to work opposite. Like, the man's supposed to throw the money at the stripper. So I don't know what made this offense, but we'll talk about that tomorrow. Third hour on the way.
One of the things that I think is actually quite fascinating about our position here in Chicago, we've been pushing this ordinance called Treatment Not Trauma. In essence, first responders, social workers, counselors, EMT, these individuals would show up to calls that require those type of interventions. In fact, in Chicago, almost 40% of the 911 calls are mental health crises. We're asking police officers to do their job and someone else's. Mm-hmm. Like, that's not strategic. In fact, 60% of the violence that happens in the city of Chicago, it occurs in 6% of the cities. And it should be a surprise.
Yeah, it's the same 1,400 repeat offenders that are doing all of this. That's according to the former superintendent of police chief there at the time. Oh, gosh. Welcome back to the program. Top of our third hour this Thursday. Dana Lash with you. That's the mayor-elect of Chicago, who's saying that we need social workers, counselors, and EMTs at crime scenes, not more police. And as Kane and I were saying, yeah, meanwhile, the social workers, counselors, and EMTs are going, shh, no, dude, no.
Shut up, dude.
Golly. That's not, I mean, I feel like this is like a Jeopardy answer. Yes, Alex, what is, how do you get more dead social workers, counselors, and EMTs? That is correct. 4,500, yes. Ding, ding, ding. You got a daily double. Just odd. We also were saying that, you know, if he wanted to, I'm just surprised he hasn't suggested sending James Taylor in. You know, that was John Kerry's favorite thing to do. Anytime anybody was arguing or fighting or terrorists were getting froggy, he literally would take James, Google it. He would take James Taylor. Because you got a friend. I told the guys, I said, you know, if you sing that song, you just call on my name in the bathroom in front of a mirror and the lights are off, he'll appear behind you.
No.
Mm-hmm.
No.
Try it and see.
Not interested.
Yeah, try it and see. See how that goes. He's gonna apparate behind you. No, but it I don't know what they think this is gonna do. You know what? You need more. It sounds like you need harsher penalties for the same people that keep doing the same crimes over and over again. It sounds like your deterrents aren't working because you have this horrible restorative justice system that's not doing nothing. That's what it sounds like. Can you imagine? I love the people who are like, we can't arm teachers in the schools. They just need to be able to teach. But yet, let's go ahead and send all the EMTs and social workers to the crime scenes to deal with the crime and violence. Let's go ahead. I mean, you realize how nuts that sounds, how it cancels the other out. No, not police. We don't need more police. Jeez. Just send James Taylor in. We totally can't put this on YouTube because they'll freak out. But we're playing the James Taylor song for those watching the simulcast. The dulcet tones of James Taylor to soothe the heart of any repeat offender. You know, when you need a helping hand, you just sing some James Taylor. Do it John Kerry style. I mean, I don't think it really worked really good on the terrorist, but, you know, who knows? I'm sure sending him into Chicago, that'll really help. Don't you think so, Kane? Southside Chicago, send this guy out with his acoustic in the middle of a street. That would stop all the crime right there. Just send James Taylor. That's all. I'm surprised no one's made like a parody superhero thing of this. Like as a joke. Because it was a joke, really. It should have been from the beginning. All right, so that's the Chicago mayor-elect. I don't think that that's going to be very helpful. Really, really don't. Now, in the meantime, there are a number of things here. I'm looking at a couple of different stories because have all of the wokery that's been taking place. We've talked about the three-prong attack, really, ultimately, against, you know, United States national security and stabilization. There have been some pushback, though. Indiana signed into law a ban, pull this up, on experimental surgery for otherwise healthy minors. This is from the Free Beacon. Eric Holcomb, the governor there, signed this bill yesterday, banning pumping healthy kids full of hormones, experimental surgeries and procedures for minors, joining 12 other states that have passed similar measures. The move comes as red and blue states push in the supposing legislation, etc. It's called, well, Democrats have been pushing their own thing. But this particular bill, Senate Bill 480, it bans all of that. And there is also, and I just want to point out again, there's no long-term study about any of this hormonal abuse. It's not informed consent because people aren't actually informed. So that's an important thing. Now, here's where there are some losses. I can't even read this headline. Oh boy. Kane, I can't even read this one, but we can at least probably put the graphic up in a simulcast in the screen. So there's a project coming out of the administration. Kane has seen it. He just saw it. It is from the Washington Free Beacon. It's a project that wants to spend hundreds of thousands of taxpayer dollars to translate a book that is a self-described vocabulary of alphabet terms into Spanish. And it's the book is called Homosaurus, an international alphabet and linked data vocabulary. So it's the LGBTQ plus whatever. It's the National Endowment for the Humanities in January announced a $350,000 grant. It's going to see the University of Washington create a Spanish language version of the Homosaurus.
The what?
Homosaurus. Okay. The dictionary features a dinosaur standing under a rainbow as its logo, defines hundreds of terms and phrases relating to all bunch of made up terms. The transgender intersex concepts, all this stuff. I can't even get into some of the stuff that they are wanting to translate. I can't, because I can't talk about it. I'll totally probably get fined. It is incredibly inappropriate activities that some people might do in a romantical way.
Why do we care about that?
I don't know. Like, for instance, they're trying to figure out what is the Spanish word for indigiqueer. There isn't one.
Indigiqueer?
Yeah. That sounds like a, it almost sounds like a setting for your television.
Oh, the picture's brighter.
That's more colors. The rainbow. I don't know. They said, so that's a term, by the way, Kane.
Indigiqueer.
Indigiqueer.
All right.
It's used to it's used to describe the identity of people who are both indigenous and queer.
Oh, that's clever.
Indigiqueer, you know. So it's like J-Lo. You just... And like, and Bennifer, you just like mush different words together to create a new word?
Yeah.
Is that how it works?
Science, Dana.
Is it science?
Science.
It's science. So indigiqueer. So what, I mean, you could, oh my gosh. Guys, this is a whole article of stuff I really can't even say half of the way. Well, like for instance, some of the, nope, can't say that. Hang on. But our taxpayer dollars are paying for it. It's stuff that I wouldn't... I don't know, Kane, where to go with this. You know, are you looking what I'm looking at? Okay, yeah. We can't... Right? That's the... That is the international audible symbol for... Let me try this. Okay, go ahead.
Clear
try your best,
here.
Sir.
So apparently, Homosaurus also includes terms that define minors under the age of 18.
Oh, no.
As...
Like they're children. There's a kid.
I don't even want to say anything.
No. Oh my gosh.
Do you see what's happening?
Okay, well I can say this one. They're trying to find the Spanish word for bear, which is not the animal.
No. This is kind of like, you know what the Urban Dictionary is? If people know what the Urban Dictionary is, this is like a version of the Urban Dictionary for LGBTQIA.
Yeah, it kind of is. It's a good way to put it.
ASQ.
Barbecue. Group. Don't forget that. BBQ. Right. That's the most important letters that you can put together.
Favorite part of that group. Mm-hmm.
So they're trying to get the Spanish word for bear. That is not to describe the animal, but a slang term used to describe a hairy and large or muscular gay man. Build a bear. I think it's a whole new meaning. Just saying. So there you go. Yeah. I can't even believe that. And this is a grant that is doing a grant. So the database is maintained by the Digital Transgender Archive, which is the thing we have to have now. And it's a bunch of stuff that's just dumb. And I don't have any. This is all so goofy. Oh my gosh.
Look, on my mom's side of the family, we're Mexican, right? So mm-hmm. very, I wouldn't even say religious necessarily, but very family centrist.
Gosh, I really want to put a camera on you and have you go down to Matamoros and ask people in your family, like, so what's the Spanish word for this?
They would laugh out loud.
Oh my gosh.
They would laugh out loud. This is just the, I think it's an attempt to, remember the Latinx thing that they were trying
this
to push?
This is so much worse, though.
This is way worse than that. This is the, I think this was all by design and planned in advance to sort of just throw out piece by piece to the American people for the slow crawl of this stuff. And this is, ugh, I don't even know what's, like you said, some of the stuff on the air, we can't even say what's in this article.
Yeah, no, we can't. Now, as Easter approaches, I'm sure you've heard now that the administration, because with egg costs being so expensive, Axios is saying that there are some popular mom blogs that are publishing tips for making colorful Easter egg potatoes.
Potatoes?
Have you all seen a potato? You know how big these things are? And so the potato industry is very Easter potatoes.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, my gosh. I'm full of jokes right now. None of them I can say. Not a one. So they said that it's actually a thing. So, and it's not just a meme. The joke actually came off of serious suggestions from people who are like, let's decorate potatoes. Yeah, potatoes. I just never wanted to actually boil the eggs and do that. I only did it a couple times with my kids because I don't want to eat all of those damn eggs. Not that, you know, I don't got nothing against it, but that's a lot of eggs, you know?
It is.
Golly. So, I mean, egg prices are falling, but, not by a lot. They're reducing a bit. You know, they got the plastic eggs that you can, so here in Texas, I don't know if they do this anywhere else. A friend of mine was telling me this. You know what they do here? This is a brilliant business idea. See a need, fill a need, or in this case, an Easter egg. They will literally come to your house for like $80 to $100, and they'll have pre-filled. They'll fill them yourself with what you want, plastic eggs, and they'll hide them around your yard for your kids. I mean, I'm of a mind, two minds about it. I'm like, wow, how lazy are you? And then the second one is, why didn't I think of this myself as a business idea? But then what happens if you don't find all those eggs, right? Like, you don't know where they're all hidden.
Can I be honest?
Yeah.
There was one, this was years and years ago. I'm going to say 12, 15 years ago.
You did
ago.
This, didn't you?
Here's how lazy I was
on
Easter Sunday. I didn't cut the grass on Saturday, just so Sunday I can just walk around the lawn and drop eggs.
So great. It worked too, right? How tall was your grass?
I mowed it every week, but it was tall enough to was hiding eggs.
Yeah, it's hiding eggs height.
Yeah.
It's a whole new definition. Easter potatoes. No one's seriously doing this, right? No one's actually going to do Easter potatoes. I mean, your kid can't carry more than a couple of them in a basket at the same time.
Right, and if a few potatoes aren't found, you're going to end up with potatoes every year.
This is how you get ants. You want ants? This is how you get them. All right, we got to move.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
This is funny. A dad accidentally put Guinness in his son's lunchbox, thinking it was sparkling water. The dad left parents in stitches because he confessed to the mistake after he rushed to his son's school to explain the mix-up to the kids' teachers. He said that he accidentally mixed up the Guinness with a can of the sparkling water. They did look kind of similar. One was called Liquid Death Sparkling Water. And then the other was a Guinness, and they were both black with gold lettering on it. And that's kind of funny. Also, let's see here. An asteroid the size of 90 elephants discovered speeding towards Earth by NASA. Yes, yes, yes. This could be the sweet meteor of death. A huge asteroid. NASA's tracking its journey, but they're only anticipating, sadly, a flyby. Coming up, why are the French angrier than Americans over the state of the economy? Stay with us. Welcome back to the program, your lovable curmudgeon, Dana Lash here. You can listen coast to coast all around the country. You can also stream the program Facebook, YouTube, and watch the simulcast, also Facebook, YouTube, on channel 347 DirecTV, which just changed recently, so I always hesitate. Don't forget to sign up for the newsletter, chapter and verse, over at Substack also. Okay, so we've talked about a lot of stuff the past 2.5 hours, and I have not at all this week touched on the elephant in the room. I mean, I guess, pun intended, the GOP primary coming up for 2024. And we always say, gosh, I hope it's not a slap fight, because it's always a slap fight. But I just don't like doing my political opponents work for them. I really don't like to do that. And there's, I always am wondering who's going to be the candidate that I never thought I would see that enters the primary. There's always someone who enters, and it's always, for the lack of a better way to explain it, it's, I can just say it's like the Ross Perot category. I don't know how to put it. Like someone who is either in business or finance, I thought maybe, you know, maybe tech, that comes just out of nowhere and is running for presidency. Sometimes I think that those people keep all of the other candidates in check when it comes to talk about business and finance. But one of those candidates this time around, my only question is how well it's going to work if they're not known as all the other primary candidates. Vivek Ramaswamy is a 37-year-old former biotech executive, and he's done very well for himself financially. So he knows taxes, he knows business, he knows finances, he understands basic math, which I don't think every political candidate does. This should be like, you know, a requirement. And he's already announced, he's one of the first ones out there announcing his candidacy for 2024. And of course, Harvard grad, and Vivek joins us now via Skype. Vivek, good to have you. Thanks for joining us.
Good to talk to you, Dana. How you doing?
Doing well. It's this is shaping up to be one of the wildest, I think, Republican primaries coming up. And I've been looking forward to talking with you because my first question is, why in the world do you want to subject yourself to this? Why on earth would you get into the mud pit? And I honestly think that the Republican primaries are meaner than Democrat primaries. Why do this?
So, Dana, it's honestly because I'm patriotic about this country. I actually believe in this country. I have lived the full arc of the American dream. But I'll tell you this. I was born in 1985. If I had been born just 20 years later, I don't think my story would have been possible in the same way. I really mean that. And so for me, I'm not just running as a guy who, yes, has built successful businesses. Yes, has had success in business. As you said, there is one of those in every presidential race. This isn't just that. For those who actually do know me and have been following me for the last 3 years, I also wrote the book Woke Inc. I wrote Nation of Victims, really shaping much of the conservative agenda in the so-called culture war that you see today. Well, the positive side of that came from actually the work that I've been doing for several years as a national leader behind the scenes. And I think the reason I'm in this race is I think the people who, the leader of this country who takes our country to the next level, who revives the answer to even what it means to be American today, something my generation has forgotten, that person can't just be pushing somebody else's agenda. This isn't a 999 tax plan like Herman Cain, or this isn't a plan to reform Social Security. This is about reviving a missing national identity. And for better or worse, Dana, I'm not running on somebody else's vision. I'm running on my own vision for what it means to be American. And I'm all in for the America First agenda. I really am. I'm an unapologetic America First conservative. But to put America first, we need to rediscover what America is. And if there's a president who's going to do that, who's going to actually dismantle the managerial bureaucracy in the federal administrative state that stands as an obstacle to our national identity, it's going to have to be done not by some plastic politician who's a career bureaucrat or a career politician, but somebody who's an outsider. There's two people in this race who fit that description, Donald Trump and myself. And I think that is why pretty soon this will be a two-horse race between Trump and myself. Now, I can tell you why I'm in this race and intend to go the distance, but that's how we're looking at this.
Now, you've said before that you were inspired to get to run, and I've read an interview, you said you were inspired to run because you saw that Trump came out in 2016 from, you know, kind of the Hollywood business boardroom sphere and decided to enter politics. And you saw that and thought, you know, that maybe means that this could happen again, that, you know, you don't have to be from DC, you don't have to be a swamp creature. You don't have to be someone who's embedded in politics to run. Is that true? If so, what would you do differently from him in your campaign as opposed to what he did?
Yeah, so it wasn't just the political analysis of it, Dana, to say, oh, an outsider can do it, therefore I'll do it. No, I actually respect that it took an outsider to actually bring a baseball bat to the administrative state. You couldn't have seen someone who was a product of that system do it. Now, I think you only get to be an outsider once. And just like I don't expect I'll be the same person 8 years from now after going through what this experience will entail. I don't think I'll be the same person then as I am now, but I've got fresh legs under me. So it's not Trump today. It's Trump in 2015 that actually I took inspiration from, which I think there's a difference between the two. Now, I think that what would I do differently? Well, I think part of it is building on a foundation that he laid. So I recognize accomplishments where I call them out. I'll call it like I see it. He accomplished a lot. But I think we can go even further, go the actual distance. And so the issues I'm taking on, many of them include issues that even Trump danced around very gently. I've said I'm going to end affirmative action. That is something that a U.S. president can do. Lyndon Johnson created it by executive order. Any U.S. president since then could have ended it by executive order. I personally pushed Trump's people, policy team, on why they didn't. The answer was they said that's not a political hill they wanted to die on. Well, I'm willing to take that on head on. I've been very clear about that. The climate cult, unleashing American energy, that's only going to happen if we actually abandon the demands of this new climate religion in America. No other Republican is able to take that on head on in the same way I am. Using the military to end the fentanyl crisis south of our own border, shutting down the FBI, shutting down the U.S. Department of Education. These are all just examples of policies I've already committed to. But the key question, Dana, is why am I able to do that? First of all, forget a plastic politician or a career politician, even the Ron DeSantis's of the world, if I may say so expressly. They're not going to be able to do it if they're beholden to a donor class. But Trump is an outsider too. But I think I intend to go even further than Trump did with the America First agenda, take it to the next level, but also do it in a way that unifies this country. Because you know what the way to do that is? You do it from a strong moral foundation with moral authority. And you know what? I am a proud parent, believer in God, two kids in a stable family, married to my wife. I think that when we do it with a strong moral foundation as a leader, we don't just preach family values. We don't just preach faith. We actually practice what we preach as leaders to say that I want a leader in the White House who's both an outsider and somebody I can look my son in the eye and say, I want you to grow up to be like him. With that, I think we can do what Reagan did in the 1980s. And we were in a national identity crisis in the late 70s. Exactly. We were in a national identity crisis in the 70s. Reagan led us out of it with moral authority. That's what I'm intending to do in 2024.
We're talking with Vivek Ramaswamy. And I like what you've written about culture war and wokery. I mean, I too think that it's weird that E Pluribus Unum, which is our motto, has been weaponized and used against us, inverted. It's bizarre. I want to check your temperature on some issues that you don't have a record on. Because this was my concern, to be frank, with Trump in 2016. It's why I went for a governor. I always go, usually governors are, if it's an open Republican primary, I lean towards like governors because I'm like, okay, it's like President Junior in a way. And I look for a record or something that I can measure. So let me take your temperature on some other stuff. Would you abolish the IRS, for instance?
I would be strongly inclined to abolish the IRS. So we've identified a list of agencies that we're going to commit to shutting down. I've already committed to three of them, the Department of Education. I've committed to shutting down the FBI. I've also committed to shutting down the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, which has gone far too far in standing in the way of nuclear energy. I've also said that we would cut 90% of the employees in the U.S. Federal Reserve from about 22,000 to less than 2,000, which is what the Federal Reserve actually needs. The IRS is actually next on our list. So I'm a big believer in not just spouting off data. We're digging deep in this. I'm very favorably disposed to either a Federal Reserve style 90% plus headcount reduction in the IRS, or possibly just reevaluating, like with the FBI, shutting it down and building something small from scratch to take its place. But that's exactly the mentality I'm bringing to this, which no Republican president has ever done.
What about the ATF? There's a lot of people, I don't think that this sentiment was the same 10 years ago, but a lot of people on the right now definitely have been criticizing the ATF, particularly after we've seen regulatory abuses, like also with the CDC. I mean, it's really less about firearms and more about agencies creating rules that are treated as law and circumventing Congress. What about like the ATF?
And circumventing the Constitution in the process, right? Because the Constitution sets into motion a three-part system of government without a fourth branch of government that actually, in a waterfall of political accountability, actually controls most of the show today.
Right.
So I think that CDC, ATF, FDA, SEC, a lot of EPA, a lot of these are on the list. And even after West Virginia versus EPA, this key case from the Supreme Court last year, I think a lot of the behaviors of that entire administrative state are unconstitutional as written. So part of this is actually just acting with executive authority to put those agencies back in their place, Dana, not by going to Congress and asking them to abolish it. I'm talking about by executive order. Because if that's unconstitutional action in the executive branch itself, you need neither the permission nor the forgiveness of Congress to actually shut it down. And I'm a believer in Article 2 of the Constitution that says that the president of the United States actually runs, who would have ever thought, the duly elected president runs the executive branch rather than an unelected permanent state. And if you think about the ATF and you think about Heller, you think about a lot of the evolution in jurisprudence around actually what the Second Amendment means. If you have a government agency that's completely antithetical, acting antithetical to even the Constitution as interpreted by a current Supreme Court, that empowers the chief executive to actually execute the actual laws of the United States rather than what the administrative state would like the laws to have been.
I mean, that's definitely the way to do it, our pathway to do it, for sure. Some people will say we're talking with Vivek Ramaswamy, who's running for president in 2024. You've read his books on CRT, DEI, wokery, all of it with culture war. Now, some say, you know, Trump talked a great game about the wall and immigration, but never actually got the wall built. I mean, and especially when we were controlling Congress, I mean, wasn't even able to wrangle Republicans in Congress to, you know, do what was necessary to make that happen. How do you overcome that? Because, you know, that was his big talking point going into the election in 2016. How do you not end up the same?
So I'm coming at this from a unique combination here, Dan. On one hand, I'm a constitutional scholar. I went to Yale Law School, whole nine yards. You see a lot of the legal analyses in my books, articles, scholarship. On the other hand, I'm a business person who brings a very practical understanding of how to get things done. So I'll say this, Trump actually had to both expose the problem and solve it. He had 4 years. He at least exposed the problem and began to solve some of it. Now, my view on the border is you can't just use the wall. That alone would have been insufficient. Mm-hmm. Certainly today, you have a Swiss cheese of a southern border with or without a wall, effectively abating the fentanyl crisis responsible for 100,000 plus deaths per year in the U.S. I think you need to use the wall and use the military to secure the border. Here again, it comes to a constitutional understanding. This is not with congressional permission. I, as commander in chief of the United States, intend to use our military to protect our own border. That is controversial.
Would you treat the cartels as terrorists?
Absolutely. But treating them as terrorists is not just what other people mean, which is freezing their financial assets. That's what they're talking about. That's table stakes. If I want to treat them as terrorists, I'm going to treat them like bin Laden, al-Zawahiri, treat them like Soleimani. I'm talking about targeted drone strikes, airstrikes, actually kill the head of the snake when it comes to the fentanyl crisis in the U.S. That is a legitimate use of force. And if we can do it to ISIS on the other side of the world, we can do it in Mexico. A little bit of an operational point here, Dana, and I've learned a lot about this. The NSA has dedicated no intelligence resources whatsoever to Mexico. All of it's gone to the Middle East. Well, if we did even a fraction of that attention to what we were able to do to ISIS in Iraq and Syria, to be able to do that south of the border to the failed narco state that is Mexico, there's the fentanyl crisis over in one fell swoop. That's a first 6 month item that I intend to deliver on as president.
I don't mean to rush you. I want to make sure we get, because there's at least one more other question I want to get to before we wrap here, because radio, I mean, obviously they'll push us into commercials. But so last week, two huge headlines came out of the meeting with Vladimir Putin and Xi Jinping. Xi Jinping was in Moscow. It was a really weird thing to see them walking with all the Russian military, et cetera. That came out of it that China had brokered a normalized relations deal between Saudi Arabia and Iran. But then also interesting, Vladimir Putin announced that they're going to be trading and doing business in Chinese currency. So there went the petrodollar. What would a Vivek presidency or an economic plan to counter that and restore dominance to the American dollar look like?
Well, you want to start with the dominance for the American dollar. It actually starts with American dominance on the fundamentals, starting with energy. So you're going to talk about the petrodollar. What have we done under the Biden administration? We have shot ourselves in the foot when it comes to our own production of fossil fuels, including natural gas, including oil, and yes, including coal, even though that's a four-letter word, literally and figuratively to a lot of people. So I think that energy security is inextricably linked to national security. I don't think Putin would have invaded Ukraine if the United States actually had the ability to supply both the U.S. and Western Europe as recently as we did even in 2019 and 2020. So my presidency is all about unapologetically unleashing American capabilities. Drill, frack, burn coal, embrace nuclear.
Expand refineries.
Of course, expand refineries, solve the permitting process that the administrative state stands in the way of today. That is how we achieve both energy security, GDP growth, and most importantly, national security versus our adversaries. And I'm going to deliver it. And again, a professional politician, Dana, they're just not going to get the job done in the White House. I'm going to come in as an outsider, but with a bone-deep constitutional conviction that will allow me to see this through. And that's why I'm in this race.
Man, they would hate you in D.C. Why would you?
Oh, they already hate
Yeah, they hate you already. Vivek Ramaswamy, very good to talk with you. This is our first time talking. You had some really good ideas, and this is a good first conversation. I'd love to have you back and talk some more. I know I'm going to be on your podcast as well, so we'll continue the conversation. But thanks for joining us. Good to have you.
Looking forward to it.
Of course.
Thank you.
Take care. Welcome back to the program. So you can catch our discussion with Vivek on YouTube. We'll have it up there on Facebook as well. I was telling Kane, I'm like, I think that if it, depending on how everything gets distilled down as more and more people jump into if you know, I'm because DeSantis isn't running. Everyone, you know, I mean, I don't even know when he would announce if he were to announce. And I'm sure other people are going to get in. But then as it distills down with debates, I think that Ramaswamy has the potential to keep everybody in the beginning because he's going to build nationwide name ID. That's what gets him. But I think that he'll keep people. He'll probably make them more honest in terms of talking about, you know, taxes and how far they're willing to go to cut certain things. But I will say, I told Kane really quickly that one of the things that worked that would work against him before 2008 actually works for him now, and that he's not a boomer. Right. All right, Kane, today in stupidity.
All right, it's Karine Jean-Pierre. Boy, she has not an easy job, but she's also not good at it, so weird combination. She's talking about the reason there are no assault weapons ban is not because of this president or Democrats, even though they had, what, full majority, White House, House, Senate?
Yeah, and under Obama, they held the supermajority for the first part of Obama's first
term.
Here's
what she says.
He can. The reason that there's no assault weapons ban is not because of this president. It's not because of Democrats in Congress.
Oh, what?
Republicans in Congress need to look in the mirror.
In the mirror. Okay.
No, they never, Democrats never deliver for their base, whether it's on this issue, student loans, anything else. They're all promises, all talk, but all they want is all power. Have a great night. Back with you tomorrow.